It's okay here, but people sometimes take advantage because it's so relaxed. I'm a volunteer sheriff's deputy on the weekends, and you cannot screw around there. It's sort of one of the rules.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, episode 29. Ethan Weiss with you once again. You already know we got to start with the housekeeping. So first things first, if you haven't already, go subscribe to us. You can do so on iTunes, Audio Boom. We're also on the Google Play Store. So it doesn't matter the device. Doesn't matter if you're listening on Twitter, on your desktop. Go ahead, subscribe. You get the fresh episodes right to your device of choice every time we drop it. I know it's NYG Weekly, but it's the off season. We'll get into the weekly episodes again shortly. We're doing a special OTA episode, Odell drama, Cruz drama. It wouldn't really be Giants news if Odell drama wasn't involved. Other housekeeping notes. We are doing a giveaway. If you're new, welcome. We're giving away a football for this episode. You saw it on Twitter. Nice Giants football with the Giants insignia. It also comes with an autograph pen. So if you are the winner, which I think we'll end up announcing on Twitter instead of this podcast, I apologize just because the iTunes podcast reviews don't sync regularly. So those of you who did enter, and I know some of you did tell me that you did, that hasn't synced yet. So we will announce it on Twitter. Don't worry about it. Another giveaway note, you guys know, this past season, we gave away some awesome stuff. We gave away a Giants beanie. We gave away an authentic Nike JPP jersey. There will be more of that, okay? And not just next season. I'm talking preseason. We're going to ramp up to the season. We're going to be doing some tailgate giveaways, so stay tuned for that. We'll let you know how to enter. Just wanted to let you guys know that that is in the works. And last but not least, follow us on Twitter, at EthanGSN, at NYGDaily, at GothamSN. Actually, I lied. One more note. We may or may not be changing our logo. That is to be decided. I'm having a few new things mocked up. Shout out to Dan Brink. Follow him on Twitter. At DanBrynk, I believe. He does some great work. He's going to be mocking up a few logos for us. If you guys are a fan of the current one we have and you don't want us to change, let us know. I think it's just okay. So going into the season, we may go ahead and change that up. That takes care of the housekeeping. Weiss, it's been almost a month.
Yes.
How are we feeling?
How are you? I'm doing good. Doing good. Thank you for volunteering to join me today.
Yes. That is going to be probably most of the episode today. And I think we should just dive right into it. OTAs. Weiss, are OTAs mandatory or are they voluntary?
OTAs are the biggest ripoff for NFL players. They are the biggest ripoff. If you actually think of the meaning of what an OTA is, like just look at the general picture. We'll get into who we want to get into, but just look at the OTAs, right? They're voluntary, meaning it's your choice whether you want to be here or not. That's one. Second, if you're not there, then basically you're allowing the public to create this perception of you that may or may not be true. So they are the biggest ripoff for NFL players that in the NFL, probably. I mean, it's probably the biggest ripoff. That's my opinion about OTAs.
Yeah, I mean, that's honestly not even where I was going to start, but it's not a bad place. I mean, if you think about it, what does Odell Beckham have to gain from going to OTAs? He already has 3 years of chemistry with Eli Manning, right? And it's not like he hasn't seen him or caught balls from him this offseason. He has, okay? Mm-hmm. The media tends to leave that out of all their slander. So he has seen Eli. They have caught passes together this offseason. Number two, it's not like he's been in L.A. hanging out with, and the false narrative, by the way, Iggy Azalea. It wasn't Iggy Azalea. Apparently they don't even know each other. Don't know if that's true or not. But he does have a girlfriend, by the way. Someone on Giants Twitter pointed it out, found her Instagram. And it's pretty apparent that he does have a girlfriend who lives in LA, by the way. And two, he's been training. It's not like he's been going around being some party boy, hanging out with Drake, OVO this, OVO that. He is training with one of the best NFL trainers, and not only that, has been being coached up by Chris Carter, Pro Bowler, Hall of Famer, and getting advice from the best of the best. And people, and one of the most frustrating things about the whole, oh, well, he's with a trainer, really? Well, he's been training with Johnny Manziel. Just because Johnny Manziel goes to this trainer, that's not an indictment on Odell Beckham, okay? I've been trying to think of, like, comparisons all day. That's like if I was slightly depressed and wanted to go pay to see the best psychologist in New York City, but that best psychologist in New York City happened to see serial killers, that all of a sudden made me a serial killer. It's ridiculous. Just because they have the same trainer does not mean that Odell Beckham is doing drugs, throwing away his NFL career. And if you saw the videos posted by Nick Wright, and I know you hate Nick Wright because of his LeBron homerism, he was there because he I've seen you on Twitter. He co-hosts the show on Fox Sports with Chris Carter. Odell hit up Chris Carter. Chris Carter was there within the hour, giving him drills, exercises, working out with him. And not only that, Odell Beckham was out west in L.A. and signed a sneaker deal with Nike worth more than his current contract.
That's awesome, by the way, getting that Nike deal.
And good for him. The biggest sneaker contract to an NFL player to date, Odell Beckham Jr.
Right.
So, if you think about it, he's in L.A., he's working out, he's getting advice from Hall of Famers, he's getting that money.
Of course.
And he's not risking injury on the football field by going to OTAs. I know it's non-contact, but non-contact injuries happen all the time. Torn ACLs and ligaments happen in OTAs. You don't want to risk that to your best player. Odell is fine. The fact that people are targeting him, and the fact that people are just leaving guys like Olivier Vernon out of this, who just signed a fat paycheck this past offseason, is mind-boggling to me. Just because Odell is like some sort of media lightning rod and it's easy to attack because of the stuff that went on last season, you really think him punching a hole in the wall means that he needs to be at OTAs because for some reason he needs chemistry with his quarterback or he needs to be a good teammate? You really think the team cares that much? Of course someone like Ben McAdoo wants his best players there. Why wouldn't he? But the fact of the matter is, it's voluntary and it is not hurting the team.
By the way, I like how you brought up Olivier Vernon. I just looked up. I knew he had a workout bonus in there.
Yep.
Olivier Vernon is a $250,000workout bonus in his contract. And he had it last year, too, and he has it every year in his giant contract that he got. God bless him for that.
Yeah.
Look, here's the thing, okay? There are many things, you know, we can criticize Odell for.
And we did it last season.
We did it. Remember at the end of last year, we talked about it. We said, yo, it's time for Odell. Can't have this kind of stuff after every loss, right? We went through every game and every loss the Giants had, and there was always something about Odell.
It was the boat, right.
And we went after it and we did. But the thing is that if you want to criticize Odell for those things and you want to talk about that now, by all means. But missing OTAs is not something you can criticize a player for just because it's done by a lot of players. And it's been done by great players. It's been done by not so great players.
Yep.
It's been done by players who have workout bonuses in their contract. It's been done by players who don't have workout bonuses in their contract. The fact of the matter is this. The NFL is a business, right? It's a business.
It's a business. You got to protect yourself and you got to make as much money as you can throughout your career.
Exactly. And look, you know, players have to do their part to ensure that they get their money. Whether we like it or not, or we respect it or not, that's the case. And I'm not saying Odell's holding out for a large contract. I'm not. But Odell Beckham is making $1.8 million from the Giants this year. He is vastly underpaid. Odell has proven that he can play in this league.
I mean, can you imagine the media shitstorm if he held out?
And I think if he does hold out, I'm all for it. If any player holds out. NFL players deserve to get money. The fact that NFL contracts are not guaranteed in the year 2017, knowing all we know about the dangers of playing football, and knowing the fact that NBA and MLB contracts are guaranteed, it is blasphemy, and it's really, really unfair. But the fact of the matter is, Odell has to protect himself. Odell's on the cusp of earning a very large contract, and we can't fault him for not coming to OTAs. He has to protect himself. He has to get himself ready for the season the best way he knows how, because after all, it was this type of training, it was this type of work ethic that Odell has that got him to this position where he is right now.
Yeah.
So that's me looking at it from an Odell perspective. I understand Odell has to protect himself. Now, as a fan, right? Obviously, you want Odell there. Obviously, you know, you want him at OTAs. You want him with, you know, standing with Brandon Marshall and catching pass. Everybody wants that. I think I'm not going to sit here and say I don't want Odell to be at OTAs. Everybody wants Odell to be there. But we have to understand. We have to put ourselves in their position. These are guys who, you know, putting their body on the line and playing this game. And yes, they choose to play it, but let them make the decisions for themselves. Odell is not breaking a team role. Odell is not doing anything detrimental to his team. Odell is choosing not to go to OTAs to better himself for the season the way he thinks he should.
Absolutely. And
we shouldn't judge him because of something that he chose to do or not to do that's optional. I've already said I think OTAs are the cheapest thing in the NFL. I think it's free labor for players, and if the players don't come, then it's an easy way to create a self-perception on them, so when the time comes of you have to pay them, people can use this, oh, he didn't show up for voluntary workouts, as a way not to pay them what they're due. That's just the fact, my belief when it comes to how this whole OTA thing is set up. And voluntary workouts.
Yeah, and two more things. One, people have been, I think one of the bigger criticisms that people have been throwing out there is, oh, really? Odell's going to skip OTAs after his playoff performance in Green Bay? If you agree that, and a lot of people, which made no sense. I was listening to Adam Schein put out some clickbait video today. By the way, Adam Schein, I want 2.5 minutes of my life back for that bullshit. He said in the video, he led off with, I was fine with the boat incident. I don't think it had an effect on his playoff performance. Well, if you don't think it had an effect on his playoff performance, then clearly he's an amazing player and you've seen him do it for 3 years. And if that was an outlier, like Adam Schein claimed it was, then how is going to OTA is going to vastly improve him and say, oh, it's a bad look. You know what? It was one bad game. Antonio Brown had a bad first playoff game. I think, and I looked this up, Jerry Rice's first 3 playoff games, all 3 were losses. He had like 9 catches for 100 yards and 2 fumbles. Atrocious. That's 3 games. 3 games. So we've seen superstars come out and have bad first games before. Yes, he had 1 or 2 bad drops in the game, but the Giants offense, as we saw time and time again throughout last season, their flaw was the scheme. And I think we'll get into it a little bit with Evan Engram later. I know we raved about him after the draft pod. I think that he's going to totally transform this offense, and that won't be a problem anymore. The second point, and someone tweeted this to me, and I don't know if they were half-joking or not, and it was quite the spin zone, but to be honest, and you brought it up, you said Odell's training the way he thinks is best for this season, right?
Right.
Odell has 3 years of chemistry with Eli Manning. We know what Odell can do. Odell is off to quite possibly the best start of any player in the NFL ever. Ever. Maybe Randy Moss, because he is tied with Randy Moss at a couple stats. Odell has set, I literally went to go write a blog about it. I couldn't even screenshot the Wikipedia page filled with Odell's records because I had to scroll. That's how many records he's set in his first 3 seasons. Brandon Marshall, first year on the team, yeah, he could probably use a few extra snaps with Eli Manning to get going. Evan Engram, rookie, yeah, he could use a little more, you know, time with Eli Manning to get ready. Sterling Shepard, going into his second year, it's a big year. He could use a little more time with Eli Manning. Now, I'm not saying that Odell's presence would take snaps away from them. I'm saying that those players need the time more than Odell Beckham. And if one of them had held out, but decided not to go to the voluntary OTAs, yeah, I might be a little more peeved. But we know what we're getting out of Odell, not only on the football field, but with Eli Manning.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I actually disagree. I think if any player didn't want to go to OTAs, that's optional. So if
Eric Flowers decided that he didn't want to go, you'd be okay with that?
Yeah,
I wouldn't be okay with that.
No, I mean, listen, you can't look. You went from Odell to Eric Flowers. That's not, come on. You know what I mean?
But I'm serious. There are certain players that, listen, you know what you're getting out of Odell.
But offensive linemen, they don't really put when it comes to offensive linemen.
You're still doing the footwork drills, and we saw with Eric Flowers that his technique was one of his biggest flaws last season. You're going to be doing those drills.
He's there, right? Yeah. He's been there all year.
Yeah. Which is wow, congrats, Eric, for doing your job. Yeah, bravo.
Oh, come on. The guy's out there, he's trying. That's all we can ask for, right?
For the first time in 3 years, whatever.
He's trying. Okay.
Back to Odell.
Okay. The thing about OTAs is that I guess I'm different from most fans, but some fans, I feel like when I listen to them, when I hear them, they get the sense that they feel entitled to tell someone how to live their life. And it's usually people that are, you know, the older generation who feel like, you know, back in my day, we used to, you know, it's all about leadership, right, and teamwork, yeah, and you know, and it's like, listen,
that's not today's
times
NFL.
Have changed. Nowadays the players have a brand, and whether you like it or not, they have to protect their brand. And their brand is not just the endorsement deals and all that. It's their body. Their body is their money making machine. So in the case of Odell, in the case of a lot of NFL players, you have one crack, you know, at this, at a mega deal, and Odell is on the cusp of that. He has to make sure his body is as comfortable as he wants it to be. And if he feels as though going to Los Angeles and working out with his trainer or whoever helps him, God bless. Let him do what he has to do. He's not missing anything mandatory. He's not breaking the rules. I understand people want him there, and it's that, you know, we want Odell to be the leader. But Odell's leadership, I think, comes more from leaning, by
it's
example,
a, it's a play, on the football field. Yeah,
it's like you watch me on the football field and you watch me in practice. Because if you ask people, Odell is probably the hardest guy at practice. Brandon Marshall told a very interesting story the other day. He said they were running sprints. You know, Odell was there during phase one, and they were running sprints. And Odell was out there jogging, and he was faster than anyone.
Yeah.
And he stopped, turned around, let their other receivers catch up, and let them, you know, finish ahead of him, finish with him. So this notion that, you know, Odell's isolating himself from the team, and it's Odell and the Giants and not the New York Giants, I think that's all a little bit misleading. I think there's a lot of misleading stuff about this. I was listening to Chris Carter today on Undisputed. It's actually the only time I ever watch Undisputed. And he was talking about how Odell understands what his flaws are, and he's really realizing that, you know what, all the stuff that's being said about me that's not true, I'm not going to let it bother me. And that's what Chris Carter was saying. Odell, really important thing, because I think one of the flaws in Odell is he was letting guys get to him. He was letting things get to him, and that's what kind of led to these explosions off the field. Now, the Green Bay game, I know that's associated with this whole OTA thing, and everyone's saying, well, you had a horrible playoff game, you should be there. But let's play hypothetical for 1 second, Ethan. Let's take away the boat, and let's take away what happened after the game, right?
Yeah.
Odell had a bad game on the field. Let's just judge on the field. He had a horrible game on the field, sure, or a bad game on the field, right?
Mm-hmm.
What we're taking away from that is, okay, he had a bad game, but he's going to bounce back because he's a great player.
Yep.
Where the criticism came into this, people wouldn't be criticizing him for his performance. What the heavy criticism that came into Odell was because of what happened earlier in the week with the boat.
Sure.
And what happened after the game with punching the wall. So I think people are kind of saying, he had a bad game, yeah, but he punched a hole in the wall. The boat, he should be there. But that has nothing to do with OTAs.
But that's the thing that people don't seem to understand. Like with Adam Schein, he said, well, you know what? The boat had nothing to do with the bad performance. Then why do you care?
Exactly. And the thing is that, look, the boat was a bad look, right?
Sure.
It was a bad look.
We agreed.
Right, it's not necessarily a good thing. They didn't do anything wrong, but it wasn't smart.
I think our stance was, knowing what the media was going to do to you, it wasn't a smart move, but it had no effect about his play on the football field.
Exactly, and that's the whole point. Is that
right.
What happens is when something like that, and even after the game, when you punch a hole in the wall,
right?
You can't do that, and he got his criticism for it. And mixed together was the fact that he had a bad game. So what happened was essentially the bad performance was tabled back, but the attack started from the boat, from what happened after the game. And then it was like, oh, well, you also dropped passes.
Right.
So there's nothing here. This is just Odell Beckham. And again, Odell is under the microscope. Should he be there? That's not my thing to say. Do I wish he was there? Of course you wish all players are there, especially the great ones like Ben McAdoo says. But at the end of the day, I don't feel entitled to tell someone how to live their life, especially someone that of the caliber of Odell Beckham, who's accomplished, you know, what he's accomplished so far in the league.
Sure. And I'll clarify the last point, and I'll, you know, feel free to comment on it or give the last word before we move on to sure. He who must not be named, a.k.a. number 24. The whole point that I was trying to make was Odell has nothing to gain from OTAs. I think we agree from that. He has so much more to lose than he does to gain, that the fact that he's doing him and he's getting money out in L.A. and he's seeing his girlfriend and he's working out, that's fine. If there are guys, someone like Sterling Shepard, for example, who's going into his second season, he's not up for a contract in a while, he had an okay rookie season, and, you know, with the addition of Evan Engram, the offense is going to transform. I would be a little bit annoyed if someone like him wasn't there. Brandon Marshall, who has played in zero playoff games, it's his first year with a new Hall of Fame quarterback in Eli Manning. If he decided not to show up, yeah, I'd be a little peeved. Not saying that they need to be there, because it is voluntary, and at the end of the day, it's their choice. But as a fan, there are certain circumstances where you can look at it and be like, you know, maybe that guy should be there because it'll benefit him, and he has way more to gain than he does to lose as opposed to someone like Beckham.
And my closing argument is I think OTAs are the cheapest things the NFL offers. I think if you want to make it mandatory and put a bonus in their contract. Or okay. Put a clause in their contract for them to show up. That's just my thing.
Fair enough.
I'm a player's guy.
I know you are. Know
that. You know that.
Yep. All right. Moving on. He who must not be named. Number 24.
Something is really wrong with that guy.
There really is. No, there. I used a psychologist analogy earlier. Josh Norman needs to see that best psychologist that I
mean, it's not even trash talk anymore. It's just, like, pathetic.
It is. It's because it's like, you know what? I'm going to offend some people here. It's fake news. It's like if Donald Trump just went out there and started spewing just complete falsehoods, saying that Odell is trash and that he can shut down Dez. And it's like, dude, like one Google search yields just the absolute truth that you are a trash cornerback, that all you do is talk, and you have no reason to be spending this offseason talking trash about two players, and I'm going to lump them together because they are buddy-buddy. You know, you saw them playing tickle fights pre-game, Dez and Odell. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be talking trash about two guys who owned you last season. Ridiculous.
One guy owned you. The other guy was a little bit.
I don't know about that, man. I'm looking at the Dez's game logs from last year. At Washington, 102 yards on 7 receptions. And 11-24, week 12, he had 72 yards on 5 receptions. So, not like putting him in a body bag type stats, but certainly not I shut him down type stats. Absolutely. And obviously, I don't have, you know, who was matched up one-on-one with him.
That's not the point.
Josh Norman's a pussy and refuses to match up one-on-one against the best receivers, even though he claims he can.
Here's the thing, though. I'll let you continue. I don't understand this notion. Well, you know, he only matched up on him on X amount of plays. Well, this guy talks in the offseason like he's this great shutdown corner and he's the best corner in the game. But when it comes to the game, he becomes a zone corner. He becomes, guard. Well, it's like you spent all the offseason talking and running your mouth, and then when it comes to the game, you become just, you know, a one-sided guy. Or I only play on the right side. That's very hypocritical to me, but go ahead.
No, it's I'm just going to read, for those who don't know the exact quotes, I'll read out both Odell and Dez. I'll read Dez first, just because Odell's our guy. So the reporter asked, let's get into a little word association with receivers. Dez Bryant. Number 24. That's a guy. Just a guy. Dez was Dez in 2012, 13, 14, maybe 14. I mean, maybe 14. 14 was his best season, you bum. Now, he's a guy. So that was him on Dez. Let me read Odell. So the reporter asked, so when you think of Odell, what is his game? He tries to be a tough guy. He tries to put on this persona, which he's not. Because he's always going to have his head on a swivel. Always. Always when we play each other. He's scary like that. He does things that he normally wouldn't do because of all the pressure and added hype that he has to put on his whole persona. He's not this guy. If you go back and watch the games in which we play compared to the games we don't play each other, he's a totally different guy. How so? When people get physical, tough, like the Minnesota game, he acts out. He's a kid. He's a big kid, man. Which couldn't be farther from the truth, because he controlled himself in that Minnesota game.
Here's my thing on Josh Norman. Help me out. Week 17, right?
Week 17.
Right? He had a couple of penalties, right?
Yes. I specifically remember... Say that again?
Do you remember what happened? What was the conclusion of that drive?
A touchdown.
The touchdown, and the Giants took the lead, right? And they had the lead the majority of that game.
Yep.
I think the whole game they had. I don't think the Redskins took the lead. Or they tied the game, but they never took the lead. I'll probably have to go back, but it was 10-3.
No, I specifically remember making this GIF during the game, and I'll pull it up. I'm going to retweet it to the top of my feed so those who are listening over the weekend can find it easier. But go on.
But my thing is Josh Norman talks and says these things, but it's almost like, and it's hilarious to me how the media just is okay with it. You missed a big point that he said. He said there's going to be fines, there's going to be suspensions. You know, it's like, what happens if, you know, Dez or Odell said this? What happens if they were the ones that said, when we face Josh Norman again, or we face any cornerback by that means, there's going to be fines and there's going to be suspensions and there's going to be, you know, flags?
Yep.
They'll be heavily criticized, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is where that double standard is. Everyone's buying into this Josh Norman thing. Oh, it's great. Oh, he was a fifth round to a school. Oh, he's standing up. It's like, this is very hypocritical of the way the media is covering the story. And when it comes to Josh Norman, everything he said is just a bunch of garbage. The film speaks for itself. Week 3, Odell just annihilated him. It was proven that he can't cover him. I guess it was proven to the people that didn't know prior to the game that he can't cover Odell. It was proven then. In week 17, if Odell had game, I believe would have had over 100 yards. He was having it when Eli Manning looked and the Giants looked to get the ball, Odell was open.
Every time. You know? There was, I remember this specifically, and again, I'll retweet it so that those who are listening over the weekend can see it atop my feed. There was a play where Odell caught a pass over the middle and went to go stiff arm Norman, and then mid stiff arm realized that Josh Norman was too far away to stiff arm.
Yeah, I was just going to bring up that play. That was actually a third down. It was a third and long, and Odell picked up a first down. He went out of bounds, and Norman gave him a shove out of bounds too. That's my point. This is all just hypocritical stuff that Josh Norman is saying. I think he looks really stupid. I think the only issue I have with it, I don't care what Josh Norman says anymore. It doesn't bother me. I don't think highly of him anymore. I don't think he's, I think, you know, he's a great player, but I don't think he's as good as he says he is.
Yep.
I think he's delusional. I think he said at this point, the only reason he's getting interviews is because he says stuff like this.
Well, that's the thing. You brought it up earlier about players protecting their brand. Josh Norman's brand is being a crazy motherfucker.
Yeah. Josh Norman's brand is built around saying stuff about Odell Beckham and now Dez Bryant.
Right.
That's his brand.
He's obsessed.
Yeah, it's not really an obsession. I just think that that's who he is now. You know, it's really, he's just a guy that, look, they'll only put microphones in front of my face. They'll only invite me onto their radio show or their TV show.
Yeah, but at this point, why does it matter for him? He got that absurd contract. Like, he's got nothing to gain from it except more.
Because relevancy matters. The Redskins finished third in the NFC East last year.
Bums. Right? Bunch of bums.
They finished third in the NFC East last year. They weren't in the Super Bowl like Carolina was, right?
Yep.
So the microphones got away. So you got to bring those microphones back. Right? You got to bring them back.
Sure.
So that's what this is. It's delusion. You know, I mean, the only thing that really makes me angry about it is just the way the media is covering it.
Well, I see
headlines.
It's slow.
Josh Norman calls out or rips Odell Beckham Jr. What kind of headline is that?
I mean, listen, it's the same thing with Odell skipping OTAs. If it's a slow news cycle, especially for sports, I mean, there's really not much to report about OTAs except if someone gets injured.
Or if somebody skips it.
Or if someone skips it. So, you know, media is going to report whatever they can. And if it's Josh Norman saying that he's the best cornerback in the NFC East, which I had to laugh as I said it, then, you know, he's going to get a microphone in front of his face. And people need, you know, a certain You know, they need to hit a quota for the news that they cover, which, by the way, and speaking of that, I just want to throw in there, the notes for the rookie training camp, Jordan Rahnon wrote a thing and pointed out just, like, the most oddly specific things about certain players because he clearly needed to hit a word quota, and it was hilarious. It was like, Wayne Gallman seems to be a foodie, really likes the roast beef at the Giants cafeteria. Davis Webb, Mike Sullivan said he's got a really strong handshake. Like, hilarious stuff like that. Anyway.
Yeah, but
they just need stuff to report.
Exactly, but it's not even that. It's not even reporting it. It's the way it's being reported. I've yet to see one person outside of possibly Shannon Sharp who said something about it. I have, and the only reason I was watching Shannon Sharp is because I was listening to that Chris Carter clip, and it was all lumped together. So don't make it seem I'm an undisputed viewer, because I'm not. It's total garbage. But anyways, I've yet to see anyone criticize him for what he said. Forget about what he said about Odell and Dez. Forget about that. He said, when I play on the field, there's going to be fines, there's going to be suspensions, there's going to be flags. What that tells me is you're going to be a dirty player and you're going to try to do things to cause a fine for you or for Dez or for Odell. And I don't think there's room for that in the game. I understand there's a rivalry and I understand you play hard, but at the end of the game, what do? You shake your opponent's hand and say, good game.
Yep.
Obviously, Josh Norman has other intentions. I'm still waiting for someone to criticize him about it. I'm still waiting for someone to question his way of thinking. But it's really surprising to me, considering the fact that he was one of the leaders in penalties last year. I would assume someone would call him out by now for it. But I guess if it's not Odell making them, or if it's not Dez Bryant or other receivers, you know, it's covered differently.
Yeah. All right, enough of 24. Should we talk Victor?
We have to talk about this.
Victor, a.k.a. Tiki Barber.
I'm going to go that far. God.
Me neither. But, I mean, listen, he backpedaled faster than Janoris Jenkins yesterday, but, and we'll play the audio in a second.
This is the second time he's backpedaled on something.
The second time. The first was with Eli and the memorabilia scandal. And this time, the conspiracy theory that the Giants purposefully phased him out last year, because apparently he was balling at the beginning, and then they phased him out, which, I mean, listen, if your definition of balling is, I'm looking at here, is 50 yards in week 4 and 0 yards in week 5 and 31 in week 6, that still counts as the first half, buddy. I know he did a touchdown week 1 and 91 yards the week after, but listen, he was a receiver on the wrong side of 30, coming off of two serious surgeries, playing in a role he wasn't familiar with, and not getting any separation. Of course guys are going to take snaps away from you, and of course you're not going to be the first look. So before we get into it, let's take a listen into the audio. Where was it? It was Power 105.1?
Yeah, it was on the Breakfast Club.
On the Breakfast Club. All right, let's listen in.
Well, I took a pay cut the year before. Coming into last year, I took a pay cut.
So this year, it was just like, we're just cutting you all together.
So this year, it was like, look, we took a pay cut last year. You know, we want to move in another direction with the team. That's the first thing they said to me when I walked in. And you know it. I felt it all year long. You know, halfway through the year, you're like, okay, I'm balling. Then the other half, I'm not getting the ball. And you're just like, well, what's going on? I was like, okay, I see what's happening. They don't want me here anymore. Because granted, if I was, you know, and a lot of people probably don't know this. Let's say I played well and I'm a 1,000-yard receiver last year. It would have been more difficult from a fan perspective to cut me.
Right.
You know, if I'm a 1,000-yard guy, they're like, well, why are you cutting Cruz? He just had 1,000 yards, had 5-6 touchdowns. What? That doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. But if I have 500 yards and whatever the case may be, it's a little easier on the fans to be like, oh, he didn't play well, so that's why they cut him. And if I played well, they were due to, you know, they owed me a ton of money that next year. So it was like, let's get Cruz off the books.
Basically, when I heard these things, I was just like, wow. I mean, these are some serious, serious allegations, in my opinion. I don't take them seriously, but someone probably will or would. It doesn't make any sense. The Giants' offense was abysmal last year. There were many times where they were looking for a spark, and it seemed like the only spark that was coming was from Odell Beckham. Now, there were times in games where Victor made a big catch.
Yeah.
Week one against Dallas, he had that touchdown that gave him the lead, and eventually... Yep. You know, was the game winner. In week two, he had that big catch against the Saints down the sideline when Odell actually dropped a touchdown that eventually led to the game-winning field goal. But this team, throughout the year, was always looking for a spark, and for Victor to even say it, like, oh, I, you know, even hint at it. And he didn't really directly say it, but even hint at it, like even talk about it. It's just wow. Like, how could you say something like that? Like, are you trying to burn bridges? Like, are you trying to not ever be a part of the Giant family? Like, this was Victor Cruz. And let me remind you guys, this was, like, you guys all know this. This was Victor Cruz, who was an undrafted free agent. He had a rough background growing up. You remember those times he was kicked out of school. He went to UMass, you know, undrafted, got to the league. Remember he had that big breakout game, the number three
against the Jets, yeah.
Remember that year he tore his hamstring,
yep.
Went on IR. They didn't waive him. He just went on IR. They held on to him for a year. The next year, obviously, you know, what happened with Steve Smith, he went to sign with the Eagles.
The Eagles.
They gave Cruz a chance. Cruz had a horrible week one against the Redskins. I mean, he dropped like two passes. He was benched. Everyone remembers Brandon Stokely. Yep. So then he got another opportunity in week three against the Eagles, and that was the breakout game, and then the rest was off. Fast forward to 2014, he tore his patella tendon, missed the remainder of the year, and the Giants stuck to him that year, even with the emergence of Odell Beckham. The following year, he missed the entire season because of complications to that knee injury. The Giants stuck with him. Obviously, they were going to ask him to take a pay cut.
Yep.
They weren't going to pay him that $8, $7, $8, $9 million that he was making. They stuck by him. You know, he took a pay cut, but even if he had not taken the pay cut and said, I want to be released, he wasn't going to get nearly as much as what the Giants were going to give him, even with the pay cut. So it's just really bizarre to me. And then he made some comments about they tell the quarterback not to throw me the ball. Like,
yeah.
Why even bring that up? You know, you don't bring that up if you don't are actually trying to stir something up. And I just think it's completely bizarre. And then his statement afterwards was, didn't answer any questions. It's not like this was a quote. This was a clip of a video where he's talking about it. So it's really bizarre to me. I don't know. Looking at McAdoo's reaction, he was aware of it, that it was said, even though it kind of got to the mainstream media around the time when the Giants OTA started. But you know, McAdoo knew about it. I'm sure others in the organization knew about it. It didn't seem like McAdoo was happy about it. The reporter asked him, "Is it true?" And McAdoo said, "Well, what do you think?" So I don't think it sat well with them. I probably wouldn't sit well with people in the organization as well. It was definitely offensive from a fan perspective, but I don't know what Victor was thinking.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad. It really is.
Yeah,
you'd think he would have learned from Tiki Barber about not burning bridges on your way out. Apparently not. And I mean, you hit on all the notes. You know, he's Patterson's boy. He grew up in the backyards of the Meadowland. He went to UMass, came back, was with the Jets, then with the Giants. I mean, he won a Super Bowl here. He's a Giant great. He's going to be immortalized regardless of where he goes afterwards. But I mean, it's sad, it really is, to see someone that, you know, you rooted for, that had the Cruz chance and his signature salsa. You know, he was a Giant, and he's going to be a Giant for life, and I hope that this is sort of the last comment that is, you know, taken from him in a negative way on his way out. I wish him the best of luck in Chicago, although can you imagine having a rookie quarterback and then exchanging Alshon Jeffrey for a 31-year-old Victor Cruz? I mean, it's not going to go well for Chicago, I'll say that much. But
they better hope Kevin White
really comes. Really better hope Kevin White is healthy. Yeah. You know, it's just sad. I wish him all the luck. I'm sure he'll be honored at MetLife at some point during his retirement. But listen, learn from those who have screwed up before you. And it's the weirdest thing is that he had success here. I mean, he had amazing He had amazing seasons. Of course, they're going to ask you to take a pay cut after two major surgeries. I mean, patella tendon and then the calf surgery. Muscle surgery is not easy, especially on the leg. So, you know, it's perplexing to me, to say the least, that an organization that not only paid him millions and millions of dollars, but gave him a chance to play in the big leagues, and also gave him a Super Bowl, was, you know, he felt okay saying these things on his way out.
Yeah, one thing I'll say about New York is they don't forget when it comes to championships. They
don't
forget you.
People don't forget.
But they will turn on you if you say stuff like this. And this is deep, man. even talking about it. He didn't really straight up say accuse it, but he didn't straight up say it didn't happen in New York. Just to say something like that, I mean, you could definitely become an enemy overnight, you know. And Victor needs to be careful. He had a great run here. I think his story is worth, you know, writing a movie about. You know, growing up in the backyard of MetLife Stadium, but it's really bizarre. When I read it, when I watched the clip, I was like, "What the hell is this guy talking about?"
Yeah, agree. Anything else on that, or should we move on to the new celebration rule?
I mean, I guess that's all I have to say about it. It's just really bizarre.
Yeah, definitely bizarre. It's a new celebration rule. Oh, God. Words can't describe how excited I am about this. Two notes that I'm sure everyone already knows, but the new celebration rule, it now allows group celebrations. There are three main things that I'd like to point out that are still illegal and you will get flagged for. One, dunking over the goalpost. It sucks. But it sort of makes sense because I know Jimmy Graham broke or dented or tilted one of the goalposts during one of the celebrations, and to stop a game to fix that, it sort of makes sense. The second, nothing sexual in nature, so unfortunately we won't be seeing any twerking out of Antonio Brown. Number three, no violent celebrations, which unfortunately I believe includes Brandon Cook's bow and arrow celebration, which I thought was one of the coolest celebrations in sports. So unfortunately, none of that. However, Weiss, I'm sure you saw that viral tweet that a bunch of the Giants quote retweeted about the Giants wide receiver group.
Yeah, I saw that. That was pretty funny.
You could not pick a better group and a better year to re-allow group celebrations. Now, you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm actually a little disappointed that Odell's not at OTAs, because they need to begin coordinating the choreography yesterday. Because the celebrations between him, Shep, Marshall, Engram will be preposterous. And anyone who knows anything about the Giants and sees their pregame handshake routine, it is the most complex routine I have ever seen amongst a group of friends. And that is just casual warm-ups, pregame. I am so excited to see what they break out for a touchdown. And I hope they do it right in Josh Norman's face so that we can get a reaction out of him. And he'll get flagged.
You know, you thought of the receivers, but I actually thought of the DBs.
Okay.
Could you imagine if one of them gets in the end zone, what they're going to do? Dude,
DRC and Janoris in the end zone together would be a clown. Again, words can't even describe it, because they are two of the funniest guys, not only on the team, in the league. For those who just listen to Janoris sound bites, and if you follow DRC on Snapchat, it is one of the most entertaining things in the world. I mean, those two being allowed to coordinate a group celebration off a pick six, or like a blocked kick that turns into a touchdown like Janoris had last season, the possibilities are endless.
I want to see a celebration where someone takes their phone and goes live on Instagram or Facebook.
Oh my God.
Could you imagine that?
Starts taking selfies in the end zone.
Well, listen, it's on a more serious note, it's a smart thing the NFL did.
Yes.
But again, this is not because the players requested it. This was more because the NFL ratings were down last year. See, the NFL likes to be sneaky, but I always easily catch their little games that they like to play. Oh, we listen to the players. They want to better express themselves. No, buddy. The NFL ratings were down, and a lot of people say it was because of the whole political thing and, you know, in the election. And, yeah, you know, that did play a role a little bit, but it was also because of the way they treated the players, and people caught on with it, and they didn't want it. They really got fans disengaged. So they adjusted the celebration rule to kind of allow players to express themselves more. And guess what? Group celebrations, funny things, will open up marketing tools for the NFL and allow them to market their brand.
As someone who live GIFs the Giants games, I mean, I couldn't be more excited. I'm itching for touchdowns now.
Listen, fans should be definitely excited. Yeah. It's going to be awesome. But we have to know that what's the real root cause of this.
Yeah. You're totally right. Yeah. You know what? It brings that sort of competitive aspect back. You know, you have like the individual celebrations, but if you have like a group of receivers celebrating right in a defense's face, we're going to see some kerfuffles, if you will, after scoring plays. I'm excited for it.
yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of memorable celebrations from the season that we're going to see.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Me too. All right, let's wrap it up here with early impressions on OTAs. I'll let you start because I really don't have too many. I don't like to make a lot out of, you know, like the offensive line formations and team one, team two, who's playing where. I'll say a few things, I guess. One that's interesting to me is Mark Herzlick playing both linebacker as well as tight end. I think that's interesting. Listen, you got to do what you got to do to stick. And, you know, he's basically just a special teams guy. So, hey, make yourself as versatile as possible. And then the second thing, so far, I believe, unless something happened, were there OTAs today?
No.
So then Giants escaped OTAs going out of yesterday with only a hamstring injury to Eli Apple. So you hate to see that for a second-year player who you expect to take a big step. But if that's the only injury, then Giants fans should be happy.
And it wasn't a serious injury.
Yeah, he just pulled up late a little bit.
Early impressions, nothing in regards to the offensive defensive line. I read somewhere that they're moving Evan Engram around, which is
he's awesome. Even been playing halfback.
Which is interesting because in rookie minicamp, he was lining up as a traditional tight end and everyone's freaking out about it.
Yeah.
That just shows, like, you know, don't freak out at stuff like this.
It's early, guys.
Other than that, I mean, Snacks had an interesting thing about Brandon Marshall saying, you know, he looks faster. Marshall looks great, by the way. I mean, he looks like an absolute beast out there. He's got those red pants.
Love him. I'm all in on the red spandex with no shorts on top.
Right. Other than that, I mean, look, we haven't heard anything much on the rookie quarterback. I saw a couple situations where they said he had some nice throws.
I heard Geno's been throwing well as well, which is nice to hear.
It's a plus because, you know, Geno's come back from an ACL and you know, he's going to be working for to win that backup job, so it's good for him.
Certainly you don't want to see him playing bad, so if there are some good reports coming out from the reporters that he's throwing well and his knee looks good, that's good.
Yeah, I saw all the quarterbacks outside of Davis Webb wearing a glove.
Yes, I saw Eli starting to wear the glove on the other hand now.
Yes, I want to see if that continues. Yeah. That's one thing I'm going to keep an eye on. As you can see, OTAs are just pointless.
Yeah, I mean, we're really digging here.
Yeah. Other than that, I mean, nothing really. It's good to see helmets and footballs and kind of get our feet wet.
And to podcast again, too.
Yes, that too. But other than that, I mean, you just cross your fingers, hope everyone gets better,
and stays healthy.
This time wisely and stays healthy, obviously. That's the big thing.
Yeah. We didn't take any questions today because we figured...
Oh, let me ask you a question.
Okay. That works,
I'll
too.
I'll ask you two questions. One is Giants-related, one is not.
Okay.
Giants-related. Giants signed Duke Iheanacho.
Yes. And
former Redskins safety. Started 10 games. Has injury background. And they signed Devin Taylor, who's like a 6'7 pass rusher for the Lions. 15 sacks over the last 2 years. I'm not sure, but what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are whatever. I mean, listen, they're depth signings. They're camp bodies. Obviously, you want Darian Thompson and the guy from the Redskins, whose name I can't pronounce. Iheanacho, you said?
Duke Iheanacho.
Iheanacho. Duke Iheanacho, he primarily played free safety, I believe. And quite frankly, going into camp this year, even though he's coming off injury, that's Darian Thompson's position to lose. And then even behind him, you had Andrew Adams, who played fantastic football last year. So, and then Devin Taylor, listen, you need depth along the defensive line. It can never hurt to have more bodies. Apparently, you know, his Pro Football Focus grade against the run was not spectacular, despite...
You're not a fan of his.
No, certainly not. So despite the sack numbers, he'll be a situational, probably third down pass rusher if he ends up making the team. Disappointed they didn't sign Hodges, who signed in Buffalo. I think he had a really good chance of being a starter on this team and one with a championship caliber defense. So listen, you know, Giants are probably missing out a little bit, but it gives more more snaps to the young guys. And at the end of the day, probably his loss more so than ours.
Yeah. You know, linebacker is a little bit of a worry for me, but not something where I am
right. I think in years past, linebacker was like a huge issue. Going into this year, after what we saw last year, the secondary and the defensive lines are just so good that they really do help mask a lot of the inefficiencies of the linebacker core. And that's not to say that guys like Jonathan Casillas didn't have great years, because I think they did. But when you have someone like Landon Collins, who's capable of playing up in the box with you, then, I mean, you can mask a lot with the year that he had. So I'm not too worried as long as they stay healthy.
Yeah, I'm also one thing I wanted to point out on my reservation, I saw that they have Michael Thompson playing a little corner now.
Yes, I did see that.
It's also interesting, too. I heard Michael Hunter's name a couple of times. Mm-hmm. He was a guy on the Giants practice squad last year. So they're working out, checking out, see who's going to win that fourth cornerback spot. Maybe they add a veteran sometime in the summer. But second question.
Yes.
And I think we'll wrap it up with this.
I think I think I know what you're going to ask, but I'm going to. Are you going to ask me my NBA Finals prediction?
Yes.
I knew it.
You brought up Nick Wright, my hatred for Nick Wright. Yes. Listen, I think Nick Wright is just the most annoying person I've ever seen in my life. I mean, he has a face that I just want to punch. It's not the LeBron love. Look, I got
The LeBron love.
No, listen, I got no ill will toward LeBron James. I like LeBron James. I respect him. I think he's a great player, one of the five greatest players ever. But he just is, like, people like that are just, like if I wasn't an Odell Beckham fan, like, if I wasn't a Giant fan, right, and I was, like, whatever toward Odell, and I see, you know, Nick Wright posting this stuff, like, these videos and all that, it would kind of be like, all right, we get it. Like, you know, like, come on, man, stop throwing it in my face. Like, if I was a fan that never criticized, you know, Odell, but you know, you read about it in the news, you're whatever toward Odell, but you see somebody like that posting that type of stuff, it's kind of like, dude, we get it, you know, like, nobody's sitting here saying he's not an athlete or anything like that. I just think Nick Wright goes too much. He's trying to create a personality for himself. It's not right. He says a lot of stupid things. Not even this whole MJ LeBron thing, it's just the way he talks about other players. You know, if you want to talk about the great, like, if we talk about the greatness of Odell, right?
Yep.
We don't downplay the greatness of Antonio Brown or Julio Jones. You know, we don't do that. But I just think that if you're gonna get into a debate with me, don't downplay the greatness of other players to overstate the greatness of the guy you think is the great player. Sure. That's my opinion about it. In terms of the NBA Finals, look, Kevin Durant is from Washington D.C. Went to
Montrose. He's your guy.
Went to Montrose Christian Academy. One of my favorite players. I have five favorite players. I'm a Wizards fan, but I have five favorite players that I love to watch. Three of them are on the Golden State Warriors.
All right.
I love KD. I love Steph Curry. And I love Draymond Green. The other two is John Wall. I'm a huge John Wall fan. And the fifth, I love me some Karl Anthony Towns.
All right.
Excuse me. Karl Anthony Towns is six. Kawhi Leonard. Sorry. Okay. Karl Anthony Towns on television. But anyways, I'm going with the Warriors. They're going to absolutely destroy the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Okay.
It's gonna go six games because I think we're gonna see two great games from LeBron James. I think he's good for two great games. I'm talking triple double, 35 plus. You know, he's gonna give you two great games. I think Steph and Kyrie will cancel each other out offensively. I think defensively is where Cleveland is going to get, you know, going to have trouble because Cleveland has a rough chance, or they don't do a good job of defending. They're not a good defensive team. And you know, the Celtics in that game three, you know, it was a little bit of luck with that bounce. But what the Celtics did that made Cleveland struggle was they had different shooters, you know, around that you didn't know who's going to take the shot. Well, Golden State is like that too, but Golden State has much better players. And that's where I think they're going to get Cleveland on that end. And I think it's going to be Golden State in six games.
All right, guys, breaking news. We're changing the name of this podcast to NBA Weekly. Only basketball. No, I'm just kidding.
I love me some NBA.
No, I know you do. Listen, you're the NBA guy here. I'm the NHL guy here.
There you go.
If you follow me on Twitter, you know I'm not like a huge NBA guy. I think the playoffs this year stink. Because
they were horrible. They were horrible.
They're terrible. There's no point in watching.
The LeBron era was the worst era of basketball, in my opinion.
At least for competition, absolutely.
Yeah, we can discuss why I think it was, and it's not a knock on LeBron James, but I think it was the worst era of basketball, I think, since...
You have like all these super teams. It doesn't make it fun. I'm not going to sugarcoat it or try to pretend that I'm someone I'm not. I'm a very, very casual NBA fan, and I had people who were like NBA experts... And, like, they follow the sport closely, and they write, and they're all like, oh, you know, maybe the Raptors have a chance, or maybe the you know, the Celtics could pull it off. Like, you are an idiot if you didn't think that the finals were 100% going to be the Cavs and the Warriors. They're two super teams. There was not a chance any of these teams were going to beat LeBron or Steph and Durant. In terms of finals prediction, I'll go against the grain to make things interesting. I'm going to take Cavs in seven.
They're not winning another game seven on the road.
Whatever. Listen, I'm picking Cavs in seven. My NHL prediction is unfortunately Penguins in six. Although,
how about that game seven last night, though?
That was crazy.
That was a great game.
And seven. You know what? And that goes back to the point about why the NBA stinks. The Ottawa Senators were either the lowest or the second lowest odds to make it to the Stanley Cup. I think the Predators were down there with them, which is why, in my opinion, the NHL is so fun. Is that, like, the Ottawa Senators were just some average team who a lot of people think overperformed, and here they were in a game seven in double overtime against the Penguins to go to the Stanley Cup. So it's going to be a great Cup Finals because you got two. Listen, Pittsburgh, great hockey city. They obviously have an amazing team: Crosby, Malkin, Kessel. But Nashville is one of the most fun cities in America. I don't care where you're from; you got to admit they're one of the most fun cities in America. Hockey is up and coming there now, especially because of the rise of the Predators and the addition of PK Subban, who is one of my favorite players, and nothing would bring me more joy than to see him win a cup right in Montreal's face after that nonsensical trade this offseason. So I do think the Penguins are going to win because they're amazing, but I will be rooting for Nashville. That's my NHL take.
It seems like everyone is really rooting for Nashville because Nashville's kind of like that new...
Yeah, they're the cool kid. They're the new cool kid.
Right.
And Crosby has been somewhat of a villain because, you know, the NHL favors him and the refs give him all these calls and people think he's a pretty boy and whatnot. Not all of that is not untrue, but he is the best player in the game. So
who has home ice in the series?
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh has home ice. And then they're the defending champions.
I mean, they have three of the best offensive players in the league.
And they got Sidney Crosby, who's arguably the best in the league, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, as long as Crosby doesn't get concussed again, then
He got concussed versus Washington, and they
And he came back. Listen, talk about football and CTE. His brain is going to be mashed potatoes by the time he's 40. He's had, like, 8 concussions.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's still, like, not an old guy. I don't know how old he is exactly. I think he's early 30s, maybe. But, yeah, his brain's going to be mashed potatoes.
Listen, I'm with you. I used to think that the NHL would...
No, he's actually... He's only 29. So, yikes.
Crosby.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean... I used to think that the NBA was so superior to the NHL, but from a pure fan perspective, and if you're a fan of competition, there's nothing more unpredictable. Well, there is, but in terms of... There's nothing more unpredictable than NHL playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, listen, no one expected Ottawa to make the run. No one expected... Nashville was a bottom seed, and they swept the Blackhawks.
I'm going to be honest with you. When I heard Nashville was in the playoffs, I had to Google what their logo was.
Yeah.
I watched. Look, it was great. I watched hockey during the playoffs a lot. I was sort of like Charles Barkley, man. Every time it was a blowout in the NBA, I would switch to NBC Sports and watch a hockey game.
Yeah, you had to. I mean, there were plenty of blowouts this NBA finals, NBA playoffs, rather. But listen, as someone who favors the NHL over the NBA, I will, of course, be watching the NBA finals. And if they're on at the same time, I will have a dual screen going. So that is my NBA NHL playoffs finals takes. All right, any parting words?
That's a wrap.
Guys, thanks for tuning in. Again, subscribe. Follow us on social media, Twitter, at EthanGSN, at NYGDaily, at GothamSN. Stay tuned for the giveaway. If you didn't catch it at the beginning of the show, I'll be giving away the football on Twitter once the podcast reviews refresh. And stay tuned for other giveaways coming during the preseason. That's a wrap. Peace.